Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, the Calgary Flames broke their streak and finally won a season opener, and then won the next one as well. They're now 2-0 to start the season, the first time since 2009. I'm Dan, alongside Matt as always, and Matt, why don't we jump in and talk about how we got to where we're at?
Well, to be fair, the last time the Flames won a home opener, period, to start the season was 2009, so it's one of those that, hey, great, we're matching, at least hopefully that stops at this point, because they didn't make the playoffs that year, so, you know, similarities are there.
So the Flames had their home opener and also their season opener, which took place on October 13th at the Sal Dome, taking on the defending Stanley Cup champions, and you and I had talked before this game about how this would probably be a really good test to see what the Calgary Flames were this year. It's
interesting that this week both the games were against the Western Conference finalists, definitely a good way to set up a measuring stick against each of them early on.
And we beat the champs 5-3, big win at the Sal Dome. Matt, I was trying to find out on Twitter afterwards, is this like an MMA or boxing where if you beat the champs you become the champs?
Well, hey, I'll take it.
All right, boys, take your rings off. Send them down the hall.
Well, they already did. They gave it to Kadri in our dressing room, so there you go.
Could we have asked for a better first period from the Flames? I know it was only 1-1, but when I look at the tempo, the way the team played, like, to me, that was what you want out of this team three periods a night.
Well, the line that I was actually most curious about was the Kadri, Dubé, and Mangiapane line, just because on our last show, I mentioned like that I thought that might be a good fit, and I am really liking both the chemistry, the speed, and the defensive acumen of the trio of players, because in that game, like, literally any time they had the puck in the offensive zone, if they turned it over, by the time the Avalanche player got the puck, there was somebody on them, and if they chipped it up to somebody else, there would be somebody on them. And like, they were able to hem the Avalanche in their zone because they were able to quickly get in on guys and play defensively responsible, which led to all sorts of opportunities for the trio and a couple of goals, if I recall correctly. So, you know, like, it was a very impressive effort by those three, and I thought that was the Flames' best line on the night.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Kadri and the way that he came out against his old team. Would you have expected, Matt, if we were to have made predictions on who the first Flame to score this year was, that it would be Brett Ritchie?
Well, I can imagine him specifically, because last year it took until like the very last weeks of the season for him to finally get off the donut. It's like, nope, I'm getting my homework done right now. Thank you. Good night. Bye.
All right, I scored. I got my quota. Someone else can go score now.
Yep.
Dubes, you're up.
Job done.
That's right. But yeah, the first goal of the season for the Flames, Brett Ritchie from Lucic and Uyghur. So Uyghur got on the board right away. We had Uyghur also assist on the Anderson goal. Kadri assisted on the Toffoli goal, and Huberdeau on the Lindholm goal. So a lot of the new guys getting points in this first game.
Yeah, and to comment on Mackenzie Uyghur, I thought he was very impressive at both ends of the ice. Very much picking up where he was last year in Florida and why he was so highly thought of by a lot of people, like especially in the analytics community, and was showing that throughout the game where he was physically engaged, shut the Avalanche down, was physical, add points, did everything you want.
Was there a Flame in this one that a Flames player who you looked at and said, maybe not the best game?
Trevor Lewis. And that's stretching it just because he played a very Trevor Lewis game. And he was fine.
I was going to say, to me, he didn't look bad. He just looked like what you expect from Trevor Lewis, which is a fourth-line player.
Like, you could see the rest of the guys having a lot more tempo. Like, even like Michael Backlund's line had a couple of minor mistakes. And the penalty kill that led to the third Avalanche goal, like, they kind of got a little lost in their defensive positioning. But other than like those instances, like Calgary did a very good job of any time MacKinnon or Makar had the puck, like they really tightened up the gap control. They collapsed in on the goalie to make sure that like there was no shooting lanes for Makar specifically, and made it as difficult as possible for him to do his wizardry. And I thought they were very good at, like, you can never stop guys like MacKinnon or Makar or McDavid or Draisaitl to carry on it into the next game. You have to just try to keep their contributions to a minimum. And they did allow MacKinnon to score on a breakaway, but that was pretty much the only really dynamite chance that he got away with in the game. And Makar didn't really have any opportunities where he could just do his thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, let's move on to the next game then. Calgary Flames went on a short road trip up the QE2 to Edmonton for first Hockey Night in Canada game of the season. And in this one, I think the big surprise, Markstrom not in net. Dan Vladar took the net here. Markstrom wasn't feeling well. And the Calgary Flames had a 4-1 lead after the first, ended up with a 4-3 victory over the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, this game reminded me a fair amount of some of the playoff games from last year, where like Calgary did overwhelm the Oilers, and they basically chased Jack Campbell and they required the backup to come in. And the backup, Stuart Skinner, did a fantastic job for them. The Flames hit the post several times as well. And, like, if Skinner was not on the top of his game, like, the Flames probably score 7 or 8 in this game. And the difference...
Jack Campbell lasted 10-18. When was the last time you remember a goalie getting yanked after 10 minutes?
Darryl's been, someone who's done that. I know... For a fact, he's done that before, but it's one of those where the Flames just were completely overwhelming everything that Edmonton was doing defensively, and they pretty much continued throughout most of the game. They had a little bit of a lull in the second period when they scored those two goals, but like once the Oilers drew within one, Calgary just shut them down entirely and just started generating offense again. And if not for Skinner standing on his head, it could have easily been 7 or 8.
Calgary played, I think, best in the first and the third periods here. And I think, you know, the fact that they got all their goals in the first, Edmonton came out in the second, looked considerably better, in my opinion, than the Flames. But then the Flames were able to come back in the third, regroup, and sort of continue that first period, I think says a lot about the maturity of this team that maybe we haven't seen as well. Because often... How often have you and I talked about in the past, you know what, the Flames didn't do well, they kind of got down in a period, and they stayed down.
Well, and I think this is where personnel matters, and the Kadri line being added to the mix. Like, if we look at our centers from last year, Lindholm, Backlund, and Monahan, Monahan has never been very good defensively. Adequate, but not good. And, you know, Kadri is one of the elite defensive centers in the league. And having basically three excellent two-way centers allows the Flames to deal with McDavid no matter what of those three lines is out there at any given time. And you're not really going to see too many shifts where McDavid's out against the Lucic line. So it's one of those where Calgary was... just by personnel, was able to more effectively shut down the McDavid line because of the just general defensive awareness of those players.
Yeah, I think that we checked the Oilers' top guys really well, and I think that's something the Flames haven't done as much in the past. They haven't really been checking those guys. They'll try to do a lot of other things, not successfully, but I think last night was the first time I can remember in a while that we had a really good check on the Oilers' top forwards.
Yeah, well, you could see, like, Evander Kane really didn't have any time or space during the game to get going. Every time Draisaitl had the puck, there was somebody on him, like, almost instantaneously. And McDavid only got through with one good shot on a power play. And, like, when it was 5-on-5, like, I didn't really think that the Flames allowed him anything more than perimeter shots. So... It was as good of a job as you can really do realistically against players of that caliber. But
and when you're talking about good centers, I think that the Michael Stone goal in the first was really, that really shows you what happens when you have good centers and you can win draws. And that's one thing the Flames haven't been as smart at I guess just haven't had the centers to do, but they really haven't been winning a lot of faceoffs the last couple of years. And when you can win a good faceoff, that Michael Stone goal is exactly why you need good centers.
Yeah, and praise to Michael Stone for being a very good offensive player. Since really the start of training camp, like, he had 3 goals in the preseason, a goal and 2 assists in this one. Just overall a very effective player on the
first 3-point night of his career. What did you think of Dan Vladar here? I mean, obviously it's one game, but we also saw him in the preseason. I think he looks like he's grown a lot since last year.
Well, we did a show before we acquired Vladar, and we were talking about acquiring a young goalie to be a backup. It was kind of with this idea in mind of, well, that guy might not be getting an opportunity, but, you know, having Markstrom in the way allows that guy to focus on taking those next steps without having to be the guy where, like, if the whole pressure of the season is on you, like, you might struggle a bit, but he's been allowed to develop while on the job. And the difference now that he's, I think he's now 25, like, that he's starting to come into his own. And, you know, like, he always posted really good numbers in the AHL and before he got to the A. And he's starting to look like potentially a starting caliber goaltender in his own right. And if that's the case, you know, eventually you're going to have to see whether, like, he can take over for Markstrom or, you know, like, exactly what you have, frankly. And it might be a situation where in a season or two, Vladar's the starter and Dustin Wolf is the backup. And, you know, we trade Markstrom to free up some cap to sign, you know, insert player here.
Nothing else. We'll need that cap to sign Vladar at that point.
True. But
he's on a league minimum now. You're not getting him for that again next year.
No. And it's one of those where he's really in charge of his own destiny, and he has the ability, and he's looking like he's putting the parts together. Like, he's a very big goaltender at 6'5". I mean, he's very mobile in the crease, and, you know, there are very few flaws to his game. So if he can put the whole package together, like, he could be a very good goaltender in the NHL, and that is just awesome for us.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about him in a few minutes here, but I was really impressed to see, especially against a team like the Oilers, just how good he looked. I mean, this wasn't preseason. This wasn't, you know, rookies playing. This was NHL caliber hockey during the season. And it's amazing to see, you know, him, I guess, playing the way that he is now.
Yeah, well, you got to figure that the Oilers are likely going to finish first or second in our division, probably second behind us. So, they're a quality team enough, like, in terms of offensive talent, to, you know, give the goalies a test. It's not like he's going out and playing like the Arizona Coyotes of the league. Like, it was a good playoff team, and he was up to the task, and that's awesome. Like, a check mark beside his name, good to know, and let's see on the next one. And, if he can continually play at this kind of a level, then it really doesn't matter when you're going to throw him in, because it's kind of makes him and Markstrom interchangeable at that point, where, you know, like, if you need to put Vladar in for 35 games instead of 25, it's like, yeah, sure, cool, because caliber of goalie.
So since you're mentioning that, let's go there. Daryl Sutter said that he wants to play Vladar about once a week. So in a 26-game season, you would have 26 Dan Vladar starts. I think you could even get more than that, but I think that's kind of the minimum they want, is once per week. So, yeah, I think, you know, like you were saying, 30, I think 30 games is not unrealistic for this guy then.
No, and especially if he continues to play at a high level. Especially down the stretch, like we're playing a lot of games in March and April. If you look ahead in the schedule against teams that should be more bottom feeder ish teams, just based on like how they finished last year and the fact that they didn't improve. So, you know, it's one of those where, you know, as we're getting ready for the playoffs, having both guys going in case of, you know, necessity. And like we saw last year after the whole, you know, finally breaking through the brick wall that was Jake Oettinger, like Markstrom was burnt from having to be perfect through all of those games. And he, you know, like the Flames didn't realistically have a viable alternate. So even when he started struggling against Edmonton, there was nobody else and you just had to run with it. Where if both guys are going, you can kind of mix it up where, you know, like if say Markstrom isn't playing well, you can throw Vladar in and be reasonably assured that, you know, it's a doable alternate instead of, well, we're just kind of throwing the series here. Yay.
Well, and I think too, I mean, Daryl Sutter's never been one to really, and you sort of mentioned last week, jokingly, not even know who his backup is sometimes. Like, he's not one who praises his backup. So to come out and say, I have this plan to play Vladar once a week, I think that really says something about Daryl and noticing Dan Vladar and what he brings to this team.
Yeah, and like with the two goalies, like if you're not really seeing a huge difference between the end results between the two guys, you know, like if Markstrom surrendered three against Edmonton yesterday, it'd be like, yeah, that makes sense because Edmonton's a good team offensively. You know, Vladar, yeah, his goals against right now is 3.0, but, you know, he is going to get some starts against some softer opponents where he'll only give up one or zero. So, you know, it's one of those where if things are more or less comparable, then there's no real need to worry. You know, it's literally situational. And like if anybody like has a minor problem, like they tweak something a little bit, but it's not that big a deal where you could still start, you could just throw the other guy in and give the guy proper time to actually recuperate without having to worry too much one way or the other.
Another story this week, and I guess congratulations should go out to our head coach. Daryl Sutter got wins number 700 and 701 this week, which puts him now in the top 10 NHL coaches ever for most winning coaches. Daryl has coached 1,399 games. He has 701 wins, 503 losses, 101 ties, and 94 overtime losses. The only coaches above him are Peter Laviolette, Alan Vigneault, Paul Maurice, Al Arbor, Lindy Ruff, Ken Hitchcock, Barry Trotz, Joel Quenneville, and Scotty Bowman. And if we look at those numbers, Daryl's at 701, Laviolette's at 718, Alan Vigneault's at 722, so he will probably jump into probably 8th. He's not going to get 777 this year, which is Maurice, but probably jumping into even the top 8 by the end of the year.
Yeah, and he's been a very good coach for a very long time, and he's... Yeah, you know, like that's one of the reasons why I wanted him back. I thought he was one of the top two or three coaches in the NHL. I still think so. And, you know, he's arguably one of the like three or four best coaches since Scotty Bowman last coached.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I mean, if we look at where Bowman is on this list, Scotty Bowman's number one. You know, I mean, he had a lot more cups as well. He's probably the best coach there. And even if we look at this list, I'm surprised how many of these guys are active or what I'll call active-ish. Like, you know, Laviolette's still coaching, who's right above Daryl. So actually, Daryl might not pass Laviolette if Laviolette keeps going up. But Alan Vigneault, Paul Maurice is still active. Obviously, Al Arbor's not. Lindy Ruff is. Ken Hitchcock, last coached in 19. That's not too far away. Barry Trotz last year, Joel Quenneville last year. So, yeah, I mean, of those guys, a lot of them still active, and it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. If those guys can, you know, move into, I don't think anyone will ever be Bowman's numbers.
No.
But, you know, if they can even move into those second, third, fourth, fifth spots.
Yeah.
So good for our coach. I think it says a lot about, you know, what a good coach, and you and I have had this discussion a lot. We don't even have it again today, but what a good coach can do for a team.
Yeah. And we're seeing that, like, the difference between, like, this and last year's iteration versus the Jeff Ward era or the Bill Peters era or the Bob Hartley era or the Gullitson era. Like, it's like night and day. Like, everybody's bought in. Like, especially through the first two games of this year, it's like everybody's on the same page. Let's go. And that's a big deal.
So, Matt, after two games, what are your impressions of the Flames lineup right now?
The first line looks a little shaky, to be honest, with Toffoli, Lindholm, and Huberdeau. That said,
Huberdeau and Toffoli looked like they were really fighting in that Edmonton game.
Well, and the thing is that Toffoli's getting a lot of chances. And he's, like, he hit the post a couple of times. He scored a goal. He's looking reasonably good out there. It's just that you can tell the timing is, like, a millisecond off. And, like, the pucks are just getting a little ahead or a little behind. And, like, it's just not clean yet. But that's just a matter of the fact that they've been together for a couple of weeks and have played like five games or something together. I would expect that the struggles to continue for another week or so, and then it to start tighten up as you move along. And with there not really being a realistic option to replace Toffoli in the organization at the moment, because Dubé's fit in on that second line like a glove, that, you know, Toffoli is basically there for the longer term. And, you know, if there aren't adjustments and, like, they're still out of sync, you know, like, say, a month or two from now, then, you know, the pressure on Treliving to go out and get somebody to push Toffoli down the lineup a bit might be there. But, you know, everybody's contributing.
Even to explore other, I mean, maybe at that point you try Mangiapane on the first line.
Yeah, it's one of those where it would depend on where the team is at that point. But I think you got to just kind of let it grow. And if it doesn't, you know, they're contributing offensively, though. And, you know, they're generating lots of scoring chances. They're just as dangerous as the second line has been. It's just little hesitations here and there, which allows the goalie to get set, which, you know, when those passes are getting through clean, like the goals are going to come like mad. And like, I could easily see those guys go on a tear where they're scoring three and four goals as a line each game. It's just, you know, it's not quite there yet, but it looks promising. I'll give it
and
that.
We know they're good players, right? I think it's just a chemistry issue. Like, I think it's, you know, it's not these guys aren't going to do well. They just need more reps playing together.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, like with Toffoli, for example, he's used to receiving passes in a certain manner. And it's hard to go from somebody who is an adequate passer to, like, the best playmaker in the NHL. You know, because that guy can feed pucks through the air right on your stick when you're not expecting a pass to even be coming. And, you know, there have been a couple of plays where, like, he looked to be surprised that, oh, the puck is here. And, it, you know, he bobbled the pass just because of the fact that he was kind of caught off guard. That's not a problem. It's just an adjustment where, okay, I'm on the ice, therefore I have to be ready to receive a pass no matter what, where, how I am. You know, I could be sitting on the ice, be ready to to receive a pass to tap it towards the net. You know, it's one of those where when you have a guy like Huberdeau, you have to be ready, and he'll get there. I would not be shocked if Toffoli and him figured it out sooner than later and both have a really good year.
And I think, like you said, Toffoli's getting a lot of chances, and that goes all the way back to the playoffs. And I think, you know, Toffoli just needs to get one in to sort of break that bad luck streak, and then I think he's going to come alive.
Yeah, like, put it this way, if that line finds the chemistry, Toffoli's going to score 30-plus. You know, Lindholm will score 30-plus. So it'll be just a matter of them figuring it out. And, you know, when you score nine goals in two games against, like, the two, like, conference finalists, you know, you're doing all right offensively as it is. So, you know, there's no rush.
Yeah, I thought that first line, like I said, I thought, especially in the Edmonton game, Huberdeau and Toffoli seemed to be fighting it. I think that second line, the Kadri, Dubé, Mangiapane line is going really well. We saw Kadri get his first point against, or his first goal, sorry, against Edmonton. The third line of Coleman, Backlund, Lewis, I like what we've seen from Backlund and Coleman so far. I mean, Lewis is there, but as you and I talked about, it's not the right spot in the lineup for him.
Yeah, it looks like back a couple seasons ago when you had, like, Gaudreau, Monahan, and Levo, where, like, the one guy's just not...
Well, remember when they had Richie on the first line?
Yeah, and it's like, something doesn't belong here, you know? And,
yeah.
Like, that's not a slight on Lewis. He's just... He's a really good fourth-line player. It's just... With the third-line guys, you need to be able to get about 30 points and, like, have that level of offensive talent, not be a 10-point guy. And, like, that's the problem with both Rooney and Lewis, is that they're more, like, 10, 12-point guys, which that's fine. They do an excellent job defensively and are good at what they do. It's just that you're asking too much of a player that's just not capable of generating on the offensive side, which is taking away from Backlund and Coleman's abilities.
Like the old game Mastermind, right color, wrong position. I mean, he's a good piece of this team, Trevor Lewis, not on your third line.
Yeah. Like him, Richie, Rooney, and Lucic, those pieces in whichever formation, awesome fourth line. You know, as good of a fourth line as we've had in a long time, there's just not enough there in order to... And, like, and that's where, like, you know, like, the coaching staff and everybody was kind of hoping, like, Peltier, take it, you know.
Well, but even then, I think, you know, at what point do we try Ruzicka there on the third line? He has yet to draw in.
Yeah, and I think when he does, that's where he'll be, is on the third line left wing. Like, especially, like, if the third line struggles again against Vegas, then I would assume, if not... playing Ruzicka against Vegas, after that, putting him in to see, you know, and honestly, having Ruzicka, who's got all the tools but needs guidance, having him on a line with Backlund and Coleman, I think would be pretty much perfect for his situation, just because he's a good offensive player and a good size player. It's just the effort level isn't always there, but having those other two guys capable of backing him up when he's not having a good time will help.
Flames fans have had a lot of negative things to say about Kevin Rooney and Brett Ritchie so far this season. You know what? They're both good for what they are. They're fourth line players. They're just fine for that role. Do I want to see Brett Ritchie on the first line again? No. But as a fourth line right wing, he's fine.
Oh, no. And like what do you need normally out of a fourth line guy? Somebody to go in when the puck's been dumped in, go smash the defenseman and, you know, create havoc in the offensive zone. Him, Lucic, they've both done that. Rooney's done that. That's exactly what you need. And, you know, like they haven't really been a defensive liability, that line. Lucic has actually looked really fast, and I did laugh when he beat out Makar on the puck battle, which, and then subsequent foot race, because it's like, what? But, you know, he's looked a lot more quick this season than he did last year, even. So whatever off-ice or off-game training that he's doing to improve his foot speed is working a bit. Because he's looking like a lot more like his old self.
On the back end, I think Mackenzie Wiegers looked fantastic. I would say the other defensemen who we know from last year, Tanev, Hanifin, Anderson, and Zadorov, have all come as advertised, and I would say are playing the way I expect them to. The big surprise here is Michael Stone. Like, what's up with this guy?
Well, I'm actually going to give some praise to Nikita Zadorov. I think he's actually taken a bit more of a step forward in his career as well. He's looking a lot more composed and settled defensively, And because he was very much prone to making mistakes throughout his career before last season. And, like, he's playing a lot more quiet of a game and just simple, you come down my side, you're going to get smashed. And, you know, but not getting out of position while doing so. And I've just noticed that his game has looked a lot more composed through the first two games, which that bodes well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I agree with you so far. I want to see how he does after a handful of games more.
Oh, I agree.
The team has looked good so far that I think even his mistakes, if he's made any, have been minimized. So I don't want to say he's looking a lot better until I see more than two games out of him.
Oh, true. It's one of those, you got to give props when they're doing it, and then, you know, criticize when they're not. And for right now, he's doing great. So, and now on to Michael Stone.
Michael Stone does not look like the guy who was 7-8 last year. I mean, this guy looks like he deserves to be in the top six, doesn't he?
Well, not only that, like, he, when he first started his career with Arizona, like, he was a premier young defenseman, which I don't think some fans might realize. Like, there was even talk of a Stone for Hamilton trade at one point, like a one for one, Dougie Hamilton, just for reference. And it's one of those where, you know, he ran into injuries and, like, that's basically plagued him since his Coyote days. But all the time off due to being a healthy scratch has allowed him time to heal up and work on elements of his game. And from, like, this is not the same Michael Stone that we saw at the beginning of last year. There's more of a confidence and a swagger in his game. And he looks exactly like the Michael Stone that came up with the Coyotes in the first place when he was looking like a higher profile guy. And with his offensive abilities, like that slap shot, frankly, like it even when Shillington comes back, like it almost would be beneficial to have him dress like only dress 11 forwards and have him in there just so that way he can be utilized on the power play with that slap shot. And
how many guys do we see that have a slap shot like that, that, you know, aren't good defensively? Like, he's that rare breed that can do both.
Yeah, like, he's been okay. Like, he, not to say, like, he's been great defensively, but, you know, certainly a good number six defensively. And yet with that offensive talent, like, he's, like, a top-pairing defenseman offensively. And that even stems back to last year where he was, like, with the end of the regular season and the playoffs, he was basically at a half point per game, which, you know, it's like 40 points for a defenseman. Like, that's elite offensive numbers. And, like, right now he's got 3 points in the three games. Like, that's really amazingly good for a player of Stone's ice time. And, you know, like, it hasn't been on PP1. And so it's good to see. And if that can translate, like, that all of a sudden throws another weapon in the mix. Because, like, while Hanifin, Anderson, and Uyghur all have good slap shots, they don't have the level and caliber of slap shot that Stone has. And, you know, even though it's like a difference of like 5 or 6 miles per hour, it makes a difference. And, you know, if the Flames can utilize that weapon properly, like, that's a huge boon to the organization. And it's hard to find guys like that, especially in the modern NHL. So, yeah, like, it's found money, basically, because, like, Stone, like, we've often mocked the fact that, you know, like, he goes away in the summer and then training camp rolls around. Oh, I guess I have to show up on a PTO and then signs. And
yeah, but, I mean, I've always thought he's a just fine number seven, but now he's really shown us that he's worth more than that.
Yeah.
Potentially. Again, only two games in.
Oh, for sure. But even, like, going back to, like, the last 20 games last year, with the regular season and playoffs, like, he looked like a full measure quality defenseman. And, you know, he did not seem like a real wreck defensively. So it'll be interesting to see if this continues. Like, if this is the Michael Stone that we're getting, like, you pretty much have to play him, and it becomes a problem of, well, now we have seven good defensemen, and then what
well,
do you
Well, let's
do?
Wait and see what happens with Shillington, because we still don't know what's going to go on there.
True.
Interesting to look back at the Michael Stone trade when we made it. It was on February 20th, 2017. The Calgary Flames acquired Michael Stone, who was making $2 million at the time. 50% of his deal was retained. In exchange, we traded our 2017 third-round pick, which turned out being to be the guy we just saw in Edmonton, Stuart Skinner, and our 2018 fifth-round pick, which turned out to be Akira Schmid, who's another goaltender currently in the New Jersey system. So neither of those picks stayed with the Coyotes, but you know, we'll see how they both turn out.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why Arizona's not very good. you know, they make weird trades and then, you know, squander assets and then perpetually are bad and then end up in college arenas. So, you know, success.
So, Matt, we do we need to talk about the goalies? I think, again, the goalies, we talked about forwards defense. I think the goalies, Vladar, we talked about earlier. Markstrom, I think, as advertised so far.
Markstrom struggled a bit in the Colorado game. He looked a little sloppy. Not a big deal. First game
but
of the season,
also,
and he's sick.
If he's sick, I'm going to chalk it up to that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it makes entire sense with his illness that, yeah, you're not going to be... And it makes sense why Vladar started the second game. Like, I'm sure Markstrom would have if he was feeling better. But, you know, it's a luxury. We don't need to have Markstrom play every game. And
no, and I mean, if we're going to have, let's just say that Darryl does start Vladar 26 times. So even if that's the minimum, right? I mean, that gives Markstrom 56 starts of an 82-game season. That's still way less than last year.
Oh, yeah. And that's where, like, Markstrom ideally needs to be around the 50-ish game just to be fresh for the playoffs. Because he looked exhausted in the Oilers series.
I think you'll probably see Vladdy get up to 30, which would give Markstrom 52 starts. I think that's, for a guy of Markstrom's age, I think that's about where you want him to be.
Yeah, and... Like, that's why, like, this whole situation on all sides is beneficial for everybody, because Vladar is legitimately looking like a goalie of the future in his own right, and so Markstrom doesn't need to worry about having to shoulder all the load on his own, and yet Vladar can... You know, Markstrom's there as, like, the security blanket of, well, I can just do my thing while he does his thing and, you know, allows everybody the time and space they need to do what they need to do.
Yeah, and it gives them, like you said, it gives them options. It gives them a security blanket. It's that, okay, if our starter isn't ready, you know, let's not send him out there. And I think with Darryl saying that he wants to play, you know, the backup once a week, I think that's going to help fans, especially to sort of hold them to that, and media and even the team to hold them accountable to that and say, hey, you know, why isn't Vladdy starting this week? So I wonder if that's one of the reasons he said it, just to sort of hold the organization accountable to it.
Yeah. And, you know, and you look at the goalies that are in the Flames system between Vladar and Wolf, and even to a lesser sense, Chechelev and Arseniev, that, it's not like the eras where, like, the Flames had McElhinney and Keatley and Danny Taylor and Leland Irving and Henrik Karlsson and Red O'Bara and Yanni Ortio and Kari Ramo and Jonas Hiller, where, like, all of those guys are just mediocre, even at the best of times. Hiller was a little bit better than mediocre at the best of times, but that was before he was a Flame anyway. But, you know, it's one of those where, like, now, like, the Flames legitimately have options. Like, where if Markstrom gets hurt or Vladar gets hurt, you're not like, okay, well, now the other guy has to start every game because we don't have anybody else. Wolf can come in and actually be a viable backup as well.
Yeah, and I think if you're just looking for a backup, I mean, Oscar Dansk is here as well. I think that's another possible option for a backup.
Yeah. I agree. And he filled in with Vegas a couple years ago, and he played all right. Like, there's definitely options where, you know, it's not like, oh, who the heck is going in net? You know, like, you might as well get the Zamboni driver from the Leafs at that point. You know, because, like, there's not, you know, a lot of those guys before were not very good. And now, like, the Flames actually have legitimate depth, which is, like, the first time in forever.
We encourage every week for our fans to submit their comments, their thoughts, whatever they want to hear us talk about, either on our website at firesidechat.ca, and you can find a way to email us from there, or even leave us a voicemail through there. You can also get a hold of us on Twitter, where we're at Fireside Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/firesidechat, on Instagram, we're firesidechat_podcast, and Matt, we're one episode into the season, and we already have some feedback from a listener, Al, who sent it via email.
Excellent.
He asked, is Sutter signing for 2 years meant that there's a 2-year plan before a cup materializes, or is it a 1-year plan with a 1-year contingency in case it doesn't happen this year? Why don't you take that first?
Well, frankly, I think it's more of we're competing now for a Stanley Cup and for the foreseeable future. Like, you look at free agents for the Flames this year, it's basically Tyler Toffoli. Next year, there's a few more, but more or less, like, this team can be kept intact for the next few seasons. And even if you're going to retool, there are players that you could conceivably walk away from and bring a young guy in, like a Connor Zary or a Jacob Peltier, to come in and be a viable replacement. And with the current situation, like, the Flames are basically built to go for the Stanley Cup. Like, realistically, this team needs one more top nine forward in some manner. And other than that, it's like, okay, let's go. You know, like, we have the defense, we have the goaltending, we have 8 of the 9 guys. Cool.
I don't think, though, that you build your, or you sign the coach saying, well, we're going to do 1 year with a 1-year contingency. I don't think they look at that year that, okay, this year we plan to win the Stanley Cup, but if we don't, we'll do it next year. I think you look at it as a contendership window. You say, okay, we've got 3 years where we think we're going to be a viable contender, and we're expecting we might win it in one of those years. So, you know, I can't see them coming out saying, okay, we're signing Darryl for 2. We think we'll win it this year. But if not, well, we've still got next year. Like, I think you're looking at is, as you and I talked about last week, I think probably a 3-year window to win the cup.
Yeah. And even, like, after that, it at that point, it becomes more of a conversation of, do players like Coronado, Peltier, Phillips, Zary, do they actually materialize into NHL players that are good as top nine forwards? Does Wolf emerge into the goalie that he's looking like he will be, which is like another Mika Kiprusoff level guy? You know, like, all of these questions will answer themselves as time goes on. And, like, that will either expand or curtail the contention window for this team. Because, like, if you look at the Flames defense core, basically everybody's a young guy, except for Tanev, and even he's young-ish. So, you know, like, this whole organization basically is set up for, like, now and potentially for more. It's just
sure, but if we just focus on Al's question, I mean, you know, yes, we could contend outside the window, and you mentioned one way. I think there's a number of ways they could stay with that, but, you know, if the team doesn't win it in 2-3 years, whatever that looks like, whether that's bringing in, you know, some of those younger guys, whether that's going with a more veteran laden lineup, I think, you know, Darryl can always come back. It's not like we've got him for those 3 years and we have to get rid of him because he's not on our contract. I mean, they just re-signed him on a second contract. So I think, you know, you don't want to sign him for too long, especially a guy who's that age. But we can always bring him back if, you know, we're contending, we're moving forward, but we're just not quite getting what we want. But yeah, I can't see them thinking, well, this is our year, and oh, well, if we don't, we'll do it next year. I think you look at it as, you know, we got 3 years to do this with this core. Again, looking at where we're at with these guys, And then, you know, hopefully we get it in one of those years.
Yep.
And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of young guys, they'll start cycling in and out, and that's a kind of a completely different discussion, right? Is what is the Calgary Flames in 4 years?
Yeah, well, you can even go back 4 years ago, and like literally the only guys that are left are Shillington, Anderson, and Backlund, and
exactly.
Stone. Like
it, exactly.
So it's like, yes, the Flames will exist. That's about it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got some long-term contracts. We know some guys who will very likely be here because of their long-term contracts, but who knows what the rest of the team will look like.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for sending that in, Al. Hopefully we answered your question. If not, let us know. And again, feel free to get a hold of us. We'd love to hear your questions through social media, through our website, or you can even text us or call us. Our phone number is 403-768-2121. Again, 403-768-2121. I promise, Matter, I won't pick up. But you can leave us a voicemail, you can send us a text. We'd love to hear from you and answer your questions.
Yeah, and one thing that I've been noticing, some commentaries around the internet and such, concerns over Kadri's random breakout year at the age of 31 last year. And, like, why wasn't he that good in Toronto? And, like, can you really realistically expect him to be like a 90-point player? And, you know, I've just been hearing a lot of chatter, and so I wanted to comment on that.
What's your thought?
It's the Toronto Maple Leafs. they're not really usually very good at developing their own guys in a proper way. That's part of the reason why they've been terrible for forever. And it's not really surprising that when he got traded to the Avalanche, he kind of found a different gear. And like even the first year he was with Colorado, he looked significantly better than he did with Toronto. And like last year, it's like all the pieces fell into place. And it might be just one of those situations where like the things that were holding him back aren't anymore. And
you know, I'll be honest, I don't expect him to have a 90 or even an 87-point year again, but I think even if we can get him, you know, north of 55, we're doing well.
Yeah, well, I could see him put up 70-plus, and, you know, like, his career has basically been, like, a 40, 50-ish point guy, which even if, like, that's not really bad or anything, like, if that's, like, for $7 million at, like, now's production, like, that's not bad. But it's just one of those where, like, when he was with Toronto, he didn't seem to have that ability to create stuff out of nothing as much or as consistently as he seems to now. And, like, the last two games and, like, last year with Colorado, it seemed like pretty much every shift he was doing something to create time and space. And I think that is a difference in his game since leaving Toronto, that finding that in himself to be more like present offensively than what he has been before.
And that'll depend who he's playing with as well.
Yeah. And it's just one of those interesting things to keep an eye on as the season goes along. Cause you know, he doesn't seem like the same guy. Because I, you know, I've watched enough Toronto games over the years that you know their guys.
Apologize.
Yeah, I know. I feel sorry for myself, really, but you know, you get to know how players play, and he doesn't seem like the same guy offensively as he was then. So it'll be interesting to see as you know, like we hit game 20, game 30, game 40, if like what we're seeing now continues or, you know, he reverts a bit back towards what he was.
Before we get to game 20 and 30, we got to get through 3, 4, and 5. And I had to say to Matt before we started recording tonight, the universe is back the way it should be. I won the predictions game. I'm up 1-0. Matt, yeah. Back to the basement with you.
Well, you allowed me to win last year. And, you know, now it's like, okay, buddy.
I figured it's our 10th season. I got to be nice to you for once.
Yeah, exactly. You got your win. Bravo. Round of applause.
I'm still waiting for the ring in the mail.
Yeah. And now that's enough of you, buddy. And we're back to business. 1-0.
That's right. If I got a ring for every win, I have 9 wins. I'd look like one of those rapper guys who's got the big ring on every finger, and I'm going for the 10th one.
Yeah.
So I won last week. I said that the Flames would beat Colorado Edmonton. You thought they'd lose Colorado, win Edmonton, which was a fair assumption. This week we got 3 games to predict. We've got the Vegas Golden Knights coming to Calgary on the 18th, a 7 p.m. start. Then Thursday night, the 20th, the Flames are in the Dome against the Buffalo Sabres for a 7:30 start. And the 22nd, the Calgary Flames are here again at the Dome against Carolina, an 8 p.m. start. So, Matt, let's do 2 things. And Sutter says Vladar is going to play once a week. What do you think the score is going to be, and when do you think Vladar plays?
Well, I think the Flames will be 2-1 this week.
What are the wins?
The first 2, and then losing to Carolina, because Carolina's really good. I think Vegas is significantly worse this year than they were last year. Not having a regular goaltender, with Leonard being out all year.
Yeah, who is their starter right now?
Logan something... Logan Thompson, I think. Their goalie system's kind of non-existent, so it's like, sure, you're an NHL player. Cool.
Well, Leonard's out, Brassois's out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that gives him Logan Thompson, and I don't know who his backup would be.
Yeah.
I shall go find out.
Insert AHL somebody there.
And I think that's going to be a big problem for the Golden Knights this year, is not having really good goaltending.
Yeah, and like the rest of their team, like, because they're very veteran.
Aiden Hill.
Yeah. He's not bad, but not great either. Because Vegas is a very veteran-laden team and has been since their inception, those guys are starting to run a little long in the tooth. And like, while they're still good, I don't see them being as... It's sort of like San Jose a few years ago, where like it's like, yeah, but not really. You know, like, dangerous, but not that dangerous.
I think the Flames have to get the win against Vegas. Vegas has been a team that's really stymied the Flames since they came into the league.
Yeah, and it's sort of getting like Anaheim, where, you know, it's a little ridiculous. Let's actually beat them now.
Yeah, and if we're trying to sort of turn over these new leaves and say, okay, we beat the champs, we beat Edmonton. I think when I think about teams the Flames need to get success against this year, Vegas is on that list.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, every team in our own division we have to have supremacy against. And then, you know, the good teams like Minnesota, St. Louis, and Colorado in the Central. And then we play the vaunted Buffalo Sabres.
You know, and again, the Sabres game, as much as we can make fun of the Sabres, might give us a chance to try things, like putting Rogicka in the lineup.
Yeah, I agree. And that might be one of those where you give opportunities more and see. And, like, this is another Vladar start I'm expecting.
You're going Buffalo for Vladar?
Yeah. It just makes the most logical sense because the other two teams are more dangerous. So, Markstrom fits better.
Speaking of Vladar starts, I'm flipping ahead in the schedule here. If Daryl's going to play Vladar once a week, there's really very few weeks when we don't have at least one home game. Like, I think we saw him once in the Dome last year. And the weeks that we're not in the Dome, I mean, we're away all year. Like, you know, you're probably going to get quite a bit of Dan Vladar in the Saddle Dome this year.
Yep, and that's perfectly fine. And, you know, if he continues to play like he did, I don't think too many people are going to be complaining too much.
I'm going to go with my gut, which I did last week. I'm going to say the Flames win all 3 of these. I don't think they're going to win them, you know, by a high margin. I think it'll be, you know, 5-3, 4-3, that kind of thing. But I think the Flames can win all 3. If they're going to stumble, it'll be Carolina. But I'm going to be brave and say all 3. And I agree with you. I think the one that makes the most sense for Dan Vladar is Buffalo.
Yeah.
You got him going in Edmonton. You can put him in against Buffalo.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see. Like, I'm very interested in that Carolina game. Carolina and basically Tampa Bay are the two teams that I view as being like the likeliest Eastern Conference teams to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals just because of their level of defense and goaltending. So, you know, it is same with like the New York Rangers, and like that's another like big test for this team is can they go up against another of the juggernauts in the NHL, and how do they fare against them?
Well, and I mean, strategically, too, if we want to get that far down the road, you don't want to drop points to the West. So you've got to beat Vegas. You could drop the points to Carolina. It doesn't hurt as much.
Exactly.
So three games this week, more of, I guess, a full week. I'd say three games is your average per week generally in the NHL. So, yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how the Flames do just over the next couple months. Because if you look at the schedule, basically from now till Christmas, it's mostly very good teams on a very regular basis coming to play the Flames. And then after that, like March and April, it's basically all the rebuilding-ish teams that we cycle through then. So it'll be interesting to see, like, with the schedule being so tough off the start, if the Flames can continue to be good off the hop.
Well, and sort of interesting, too, that we are at home until November 5th, and then we're really on the road for the whole month. So you really get that time at home to build your chemistry, and then we'll get to see the Flames start their road game.
Mm-hmm. And that certainly helps, especially with practices, because like, you don't need to worry about travel at all. And you can iron out all those kinks, like the Huberdeau and Toffoli timing issue. You know, like, that can be worked on significantly with daily practices, whereas if they're on the road, you're hotels, airports, and all that kind of stuff, and there's just not enough time. You're just basically showing up for the games and then on to the next jaunt.
Matt, I think that about wraps us up for this week. Let's enjoy these three games this week, the next three at the Saddle Dome, and I will talk to you after game five.
And as always, Oilers suck. Oh, wait, I mean, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.